Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. Had a good first hour. Talked to Nico Horner, Cubs shortstop. He shared our White Sox predictions. Bruce is over his skis. He has the White Sox winning 95 games. I have them winning 94. A little more realistic and reasonable there, Bruce. I think that I am balancing your
one game
unabashed enthusiasm by one game.
One game different.
but I do think it reflects that this is a team that is thinking big, and they should, because yesterday's move, A.J. Pollock comes over from the Dodgers, and he gives the White Sox another option in the outfield. They get rid of Craig Kimbrell. I think it's a move where both players were expendable, Bruce, and it's an exchange that really helps both teams serve the needs that they had.
Yeah, well, without question. I mean, you know, we talk about the depth that the White Sox have now in the outfield, and that's good in a lot of different ways. Pollock is such a professional player. You know, like we said, the only difficulties for him during his career is staying on the field. He has had challenges. But last year, if you look at the metrics, and you like metrics, it was arguably his best year in baseball, considering the at-bats. The 21 home runs were the most that he's hit. He just had a sensational season. So from that perspective, the White Sox are getting a player for the same amount of money that they were going to pay Kimbrell. And with all due respect to Kimbrell, he has to be a closer. He is He is very much more a closer than he is anything else. And this is a trade that should help both teams possibly end up in the World Series together in 2023.
You know, you don't look at it this way necessarily, Bruce, because Craig Kimbrell kind of had to be traded. He wasn't, you know, a ninth inning guy with the Sox. But yesterday they lost two bullpen pieces, Garrett Crochet undergoing Tommy John surgery and Craig Kimbrell to the Dodgers. That will be one of the things to watch moving forward, how active Rick Hahn is in terms of keeping an eye on their need for a left-handed power arm in the bullpen to replace Crochet. But we'll talk about that later. What we want to talk about now is Tony La Russa. Our next guest is on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Well, I'm looking forward to this night game that we have a chance to play in against the Diamondbacks, and they're going to honor Roland Heaven, so it's going to be a special day.
What a great occasion. Yeah, that is terrific that they will honor Roland Heaven. And Tony, we are talking about the trade that was made yesterday. A.J. Pollock joins your team, and Bruce and I have been talking the first hour about just how he fits in. Left field, right field, you have the luxury of depth in the outfield. How do you see A.J. Pollock being used best?
Well, like that. He's a quality pro. I had the good fortune of being in Arizona with him during my time there. So I know, you know, when in those years, it was he and Paul Goldschmidt were the leaders on that team. And then he goes to L.A., where he's been part of the playoffs, you know, every year, and including a world championship. He's a solid defensive player. He's got tools. He runs well. He's got a good arm. You know, when he makes contact, the ball is alive off his bat. So he's playing tonight. He's going to play right field in our game against the Diamondbacks. And, you know, one thing about outfielders, it's not like if you bring in an extra first baseman or second baseman, you know, there's only one of them. But there are three outfielders, and this really gives us some protection where, you know, we can have some guys that if somebody gets a little sore, we have the depth to handle it.
Tony, pleasure having you on this morning. Thanks for taking the time out, David, and I appreciate it. When you look at your DH situation, you have the luxury of having some really great hitters to choose from, and you also have the luxury of moving people around and getting the best out of them as far as getting them in that role and then maybe DHing to save their legs. What is the balance that you look at there? How challenging is that for a manager who has very good players at multiple positions on the team.
Well, I remember from my previous experience in American League, and then it was, you know, you go in the National League and it's not the same. Now you come, I came back last year. You don't sometimes have a choice because sometimes you have such a, you know, an overwhelming kind of DH that he needs to play to be part of that lineup, and he's not really a defensive player. And I can give you a couple, three examples. You know, you would know who they are too. But the one that works best for a team is a situation like ours, where you can use that DH as a half a day off for Abreu. In our club too, I remember the second half of the year when Yaz came back. I mean, he was one of our most productive hitters. So when he wasn't catching, he was able to DH. And the same thing would be true like Eloy. You can get him off his feet. So when you can manipulate that the DH spot to keep guys in the lineup without giving them a full day off when they're getting, you know, and maybe they're a little sore or they're, you know, just fatigued, it's really an asset to the club. And that's, we'll just pay attention. You know, a guy like Jose, you know, wants to be in there every day at first base, but every once in a while, you know, the DH makes sense. So we just will rotate it.
Joined by White Sox manager Tony La Russa here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Tony, that was good news when you made the trade yesterday for A.J. Pollock. The bad news was that Garrett Crochet, the power lefty, he is going to undergo Tommy John surgery, out for this season. He has special stuff. He is a guy that was developing nicely. How do you replace a guy with stuff that seems irreplaceable?
Well, I'm gonna back up on stride and let you know that Craig Kimbrel is a really special, not just talent, but a special teammate. And you know, I knew him in Boston. I saw him firsthand. And he could not have been better with us as a teammate. He came in ready, trying to do everything he could to help us. I think it was a brilliant move by Rick in the front office and Kenny, you know, to add that kind of potential. I think the deeper we got into the playoffs, you know, his value would have shown itself. But when you start the season new, it really is a difficult position when you've been a closer with him. He's got real good credentials to be a Hall of Fame guy. So I just want fans to know that this is a very special guy. But in our situation, man, you try to put him in position to succeed. And it's going to be very difficult. And he would have handled it the best he could, but I just wish him the best. We all wish him the best with the Dodgers. Now, at the same time, this game can be brutal at times with the breaks that a player or pitcher has to go through, and that's what happened to Garrett. It was very difficult in the clubhouse after the game, you know, and he was torn up. So we all got together yesterday and we talked about it, and it's a lot like when Eloy got hurt in spring training last year. You know, that our focus number one is on Garrett and making sure that he knows that we're behind him and he's a part of everything that we do. And the one good thing about it, he's a young guy, and he gets this thing taken care of. You remember in 2020 he had some soreness there, and so this probably was going to happen at some point, and it happens now. So he can have the surgery, he can do the rehab, and he can come back, you know, with a brand new tendon there, and have a lot of years of a great career. So we're all very supportive. We want him to be around as much as possible. But at the same time, you know, the games count, and we're going to have to fill that spot, you know, with somebody else, and you know, we'll figure it out. We'll do it. You know, we're deep enough to make it work, but we're going to miss Garrett.
Tony, managing in the age of social media and Twitter, you had to come out and talk about how you have always been supportive of the White Sox fans, and I remember that going back to your first time with them, and even very respectful as you were always when you were an opposing manager. But how is it different now, having to respond to social media as a manager and opinions of people when they think that you've said one thing and you really have meant another?
I think the best thing is that you don't respond. You know, I mean, there's a lot of issues in the first season. And whenever it was personal, I just ignored it because there's nothing you can do about it except do your job. It's just a reality. People have opinions, and they're welcome to their opinions. But when it goes to something that involves someone else, like if a social media comment had something to do between about my relationship with a player, for example, that I know is not true, I'd speak up. In this case, this issue about me disrespecting our White Sox fans and being rude, I mean, that really bothered me because that is totally 100% the opposite of what I feel. I mean, I felt it when I was here before. Whenever I come back to town and I would see White Sox fans, they knew I was part of the family, and I am very excited to be back and hopefully make them happy and be part of a team that gets to October again and goes as far as we can go. So for me to listen and read that, you know, I meant to disrespect them. No. What I tried to say was anytime you have an issue come up where people want somebody to add people to your team, you want the clubhouse to know that you believe, the coaching staff and you believe, and the organization believes that we can win with what we have. And that's what I meant. I meant that I think the White Sox fans know that we're going to do the best we can with what we have, and it also means the front office. And they think they're working hard to make moves, but there's 29 other teams that are trying to make moves too. So, you know, we don't get distracted about, hey, what if this guy or what if that guy gets traded aside? That's not how we operate. And what I meant more than anything else was if people think we need another player or a pitcher or something, it's not, you know, that they don't have the White Sox mentality that, you know, we go with what we got.
Tony, I was more intrigued by something two of your players said this week rather than some fans. And in The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal quoted Liam Hendricks and Lucas Giolito as talking about the role complacency played in the second half kind of slide last year, if you want to call it that. You guys weren't as good in the second half as you were in the first. And as somebody who is known for his edge, as somebody as competitive as you are, I wondered how you interpreted those comments coming from your players.
Well, I respect those guys. I mean, the thing that we talked about last year, and I would mention it now, you know, these are, I say it all the time, you know, men, not machines. It's human nature to have to fight to keep your edge. And, you know, we had the big lead. You know, we kept having some issues with people that we were losing, but then we got the big outfielders back. But the one I would say to him was that overall, we fought through that, and we had a winning record every month of the 2021 season. That is really hard to do unless you're very relentless. And even in the second half, we, you know, here and there, you know, we were not, maybe didn't push it as hard. We still managed to get the wins to stay ahead of the Central. And in the end, you know, we really looked at having the lead the last two or three weeks to say, okay, if you're sore, rest, don't play. If you're tired, rest, don't play. But when you play, we got to play. And we wanted the club made the decision. They wanted to finish strong. And I know in 2020, you know, they struggled. And I think, you know, we won, you know, we were like 6-1 or somebody was 7 out of the last 10 going into the playoffs. So, you know, I just think it's a normal kind of issue when you get far ahead. There's a tendency that you can lose an edge, and we fought it and we handled it decently. But it's also, I agree with the guys, you know, it's something we can learn for. I remember in Boston, you know, they won like 100 and some games because you keep pushing, and it's a good lesson for us. First of all, we got to get to that place where, you know, we're really doing well, and then we keep pushing.
Tony La Russa joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for just a few more minutes. And interesting, Tony, you and I were talking in the backfield a couple days ago, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, push from Sox fans and media for you guys to go out and get another starting pitcher, much easier said than done. But when I talk to you about you know, the additions like Graveman and Harrison, you told me you know, the belief in what Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams have been doing and how you stay out of it and are very pleased to let them do their jobs. I wish you could reiterate some of those thoughts about the people you work with and you work for.
Well, I mean, as long as I've managed, I understand the way it is, you know, between ownership and front office, you know, they decide, the ownership decides what the budget is, and then the front office, together with all their people, including the scouts and player development, you know, they look at what is this year and what's ahead. And they are responsible. So in the end, I mean, it's a very clear lesson to all of us in uniform, as a, whether you're in the minor leagues or in the major leagues. It's their job to put guys in uniform, and it's our job to get to coach them up and get them to play as good as they can. It's that simple. Now, in some situations, and sometimes it happens, the front office does not do a good job of communicating with the people in uniform, like, you know, coaching staff in major leagues. You know, but that's not the case. Every place I've been lucky that way. It's that way here. Between Rick and Kenny and Jeremy, we get all the information that we need about where we are, what they're trying to do. And they ask the opinion of myself and our coaches, our hitting coaches and our, you know, pitching coaches and infield coaches, outfield coaches. So they take the communication and then they put it together with what, you know, with what they're doing. So I think it's the healthiest situation you can have. But in the end, you know, we appreciate, like what you started with, you know, have they been trying to add a starting pitcher? All 29 clubs, other clubs are trying to do the same thing. And I just appreciate how hard they work at it and how good they've been at putting together this roster. So, you know, we're gonna do the best we can with it, and whatever they give us, and they give us a lot, we'll do our best with it.
Tony, you won 93 games last year before losing to the Astros in four in the playoffs. Carlos Rodon goes to the Giants. Replacing him with Michael Kopech creates some questions, but also some opportunity and possibility. Why should Sox fans believe this team is better off than the one that lost to the Astros in the postseason?
Well, I mean, I struggle to answer that in the sense that, you know, I want to make sure that I'm also truthful and respectful. You got to give Carlos Rodon a tremendous amount of credit for how he started that season, how he got that lead to begin with, and he was just outstanding. And the fact that, you know, that towards the end he had the issues, what made it tough for us. So, I want to make sure that when we think about being better, we want to give Carlos credit. But somebody else is going to step into that spot in the rotation. You know, Michael has this opportunity. Now, the shortened spring and the fact that we couldn't communicate is, you know, it's having an effect on, you know, how much stamina he's got. He pitched yesterday and now, I'm sorry, the night before, and now he's pitching one more time before we leave. But we got Vince Velasquez. You know, somebody's going to step up and do a job. The one place that I do know that we can look and get excited is that we're together one more year. We've been through the season. We know the stuff that we did well. We know the stuff that we needed to do better, and we've been working at it. And then something I think Bruce mentioned earlier, to give the front office credit, we've had a very good chemistry, and we've added a couple of guys in Kendall and Josh that are make us even better. I mean, these are two really outstanding professionals who are very good at what they do and are great clubhouse guys. So for all those reasons, I think that we're going to be a better club now. I do believe the division is going to be tougher, and it's, you know, we'll see what the record turns out to be. And we're gearing up for a tough fight.
Tony, in closing with you, and again, David and I appreciate your time this morning. I know how busy your schedule is. When you look at the White Sox from last year into this year. How confident are you the defense is going to be better this year? I mean, obviously, you're going to have Luis Robert from the beginning, which is enormous when you put a Gold Glove center fielder back in there potentially for the entire season. But defensively, will the White Sox be a better team, do you feel, in 2022?
Well, yes, I do. I think we'll be better. I think, obviously, the health of somebody as dominant as Luis at center field will be a part of that. But I know the work that's been going on for 3 weeks here with our infield and outfield, and I know it's going to pay off. So I think that's part of the improvement. So I just think, you know, at the same, you know, the defense gets some attention, but you know, we have some improvement offensively too, because the major league's all about adjusting. A lot of pitchers and pitching staffs are going to adjust to what we did last year, and it's going to be up to us to make those adjustments and stay ahead of them. So it's not just the defense; it's the offense and our attitude. You know, we just got to make sure we keep fighting no matter what.
Tony, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck this season. Look forward to seeing you when you get back to Chicago.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Tony La Russa, White Sox manager, joining us from Arizona. A.J. Pollock in the lineup for tonight's White Sox game. That's interesting, Bruce. That's a quick transition, although he only has to jump sides of the complex, right? The Dodgers train to the same Camelback Ranch, so A.J. Pollock in there. A lot of interesting stuff there we can get to. Maybe you want to weigh in, 312-644-6767. Also, how many games will the Cubs win? Bruce will tell you next. So will I. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
There's a high, deep drive to center field. Rodriguez back. He's at the warning track. He leaps. See ya, so long. And his first ever Cubs hit ends up on the berm.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score. Dan Cummings from 9 until 11 o'clock. See ya, so long. Is that what we're going to do now, Bruce? Is that the home run call for...
Mick Gillespie, who does the AA Chicago Cubs Tennessee affiliate. And I liked it.
I do too. Mick does a great job. He filled in this week, and Matt Spiegel gets a shot today with the Cubs playing later this afternoon. He right here on the score, 2 o'clock is the first pitch, and looking forward to hearing what Spiegs has to say. With Suzuki homering, that was his first hit as a Cub. There will be more home runs, Bruce. Look, it's spring training, and we just got done talking to Tony La Russa, and there is optimism in the air for both teams for good reason. For the White Sox, I don't know, less good reason for the Cubs. What's realistic here? Let's talk about that with Suzuki in right field. You now have Stroman as your number two, maybe 1A starter. What's realistic to expect from the Cubs, Bruce?
I do not know. I really don't. And, you know, look, I've spent a lot of time in spring training watching them. There's tremendous opportunities for a lot of players on this team. You know, again, they brought in 7 different relief pitchers over the last 3.5 weeks. Have no idea what that bullpen's going to look like. They have some veterans in there like Chris Martin, Jesse Chavez, who was with them before, David Robertson. But I can't tell you how that's going to work out. I just don't know. I don't. Right now, we don't know what the rotation is.
Right.
1 through 5. We don't know who the closer is. So there. You know, we're only 5-6 days away from opening day, and there's still question marks for David Ross and who's going to be doing what.
Well, let's answer a couple of those questions. Wade Miley is being shelved for 10 days, shutting it down. He experienced some soreness in his left elbow. That's not good, especially when he's a left-hander. So we'll see where the Cubs number 3 starter, when he resumes throwing and gets back in the rotation. Andrelton Simmons, the Gold Glove winning shortstop, who they signed 1 year, $4 million as depth, as insurance. He's a good glove guy, Bruce, but he's going to start the season on the injured list. Nico Horner, who we talked to last hour, will start at shortstop. Nick Madrigal. I agree with you. There's a lot of unknowns, and there's a lot of veterans who, you know, the bullpen committee, and you've got a guy like Clint Frazier who is trying to prove that he wasn't a bust with the Yankees, and he's playing freer, and he feels, you know, better. The great story by Megan Montemiro in the Tribune the other day about him having facial hair and him understanding that now, as not being with the Yankees, he can be himself. I've got him down for 78 wins, Bruce. I think the Cubs win 78, just under 500. They flirt with respectability. They maybe start out better than we think, but I don't think they're deep enough, and I don't think their pitching is good enough to get them over that 500 hump. I got them winning 78 games this year.
Well, I like that number. I think it can be anywhere from 70 to 85 wins, depending on how it breaks. I know that's not giving anybody a firm idea, but you know what? Let's go out to the phone lines and see what other people are thinking about.
That's a great idea. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start with Paul in Elmhurst. Paul has a Cubs prediction. Welcome inside the clubhouse, Paul.
Hi. I think they're going to be, unfortunately, a lot worse than you guys are talking about. I just think this roster is full of holes, and I can't see them winning more than 70 games.
It's a long season, Paul. That's going to be a long season. Maybe. You're right. Maybe. Thanks for the phone call, Bruce.
Well, here's one thing that I looked at the Cub team for, and if you want to take it as a negative, you can. If you want to take it as there's a lot of opportunity to be that guy, you can. And that is, there's really no star player on the Chicago Cubs the way it is set up right now. Wilson Contreras is the closest to that. But, you know, I can't remember in many years, even when, you know, back in some of the 90s and, you know, back in the middle 2000s when they didn't compete a few years, that they didn't have a star. And I don't know if that's a requisite for, you know, okay, we're not going to be good, but at least we have a star to come out and look at. But it's also good news from the perspective that the Madrigals, the Horners, the Suzukis, they can become that next guy, okay? They can become that next fan favorite. They were going to have ample opportunity to do so. So I'm not doom and gloom when it comes to the fact that there's no big star in this team. It's just a harsh reality that they are in transition.
You're right, Bruce. There isn't a star. Is that what they mean by the slogan, it's different here? Because they usually have a star. This year it is different here. There's no star to be found. If you want to call it Wilson Contreras, that's with an asterisk, because is he truly a star and will he be here very long? Say a Suzuki? Maybe, but there's no definites there that you can count on making a transition. I think he could be the Cubs MVP. I think Nick Madrigal could be their most surprising breakout kind of player. Those would be my two choices. How about you?
Yeah, I like the idea of Horner playing short every day and showing what he has. He's a 300 hitter. Limited time on the field. You know, last year, I think it was only 40 games. Obviously, he only played 28 or 29 out of the 60 the year before. 2019, he came up at the end of the year and was terrific, but it was only for about 25 games. So there's plenty to prove there that you're a starting shortstop in the major leagues. But I like his ability, and if he's healthy, I think he's got a chance. You know, and then you look at the outfield, there's chances for guys like Clint Frazier and Hermosillo to start every day in center field. If it's not going to be Jason Hayward, it's going to be one of those guys out there. Mm. There are guys out there. You know, Ian Happ has not done enough yet to say that he is a star. He had 25 home runs last year, but he had 3.5 months where he did nothing. He had a terrific last 6 weeks of the season. Consistency has to be a part of Happ's game if he's going to take the next step up as a star player in the league.
Bruce, before we get to the phone lines again, does Michael Hermosillo make the opening day roster?
I think he does, yeah.
Wow.
Very good defender. He might be the best defender in the outfield for
Great
the
story.
Chicago Cubs.
I love that story.
Yeah, it is a good story. And I think people are going to like Frazier, too. He's starting to hit. There's going to be ample opportunity out there. I'm not pushing Jason Hayward out the door, But, you know, they are going to have to, you know, if he doesn't, quote unquote, earn his at-bats after the first couple months, it's going to be someone else's position.
Let's go out to the phone lines. Otto is in Westmont. Good morning, Otto. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Gentlemen, thanks for taking my call. I think the Cubs are, well, I don't think, the Cubs are a fantastic money-making opportunity for their ownership, and they do a great job of raising money. Unfortunately, they don't turn that money around back into talent on the field. And seeing these commercials on the television showing all these quote-unquote great moments in Cubs history, and come on out here and spend your money at Wrigley Field, but it's just going to pad the ownership's bottom line. That's all this is. The team is a moneymaker. That's all it is. It's not. I'd almost rather, and I hate to say this, I'd almost rather see the McCaskies owning the Cubs. At least there, I know we got some guys that are actual fans that care about what the team's going to do. And I know it's guys like Bruce. You got to make sure you keep ownership happy, or they'll shut in. They won't let you in the
Otto,
locker room.
Otto, wait a second. Otto, wait a second. First of all, that's not really fair to Bruce. And secondly,
it's okay.
Tom Ricketts can be criticized for a lot of things, but do you think he's not a fan of the Cubs?
Not enough. Not enough to where he's going to spend money on the team and get guys out there. Instead, we have people that we have a lot of chances. That means a lot of question marks. And when there's question marks, they're going to lose.
Otto, let me ask you a question.
Has way too much money coming in to put out the amount of product and the amount of pay that is put into their players.
Otto, let me ask you a question, and I think your criticism of me is fair, and you're always going to have an ability to come on the show and tell what your thoughts are. But when they offered Baez, when they offered Rizzo, when they offered Bryant contracts that were more than what they ended up signing for, was that not a commitment to trying to be better in the future and spend their money?
Well, I would counter with the question, why does it have to be Brian Rizzo Baez? Why can't it be other players?
You tell us the ones that they missed on.
I don't have a list in front of me. That's what the experts are for, right?
Well, again, this is a transition. Otto, thanks for your call.
Thanks for the phone call, Otto.
And again, call again. Look, criticism is fair. You know, they didn't spend their money. The question is, was there money to spend that would have been smart for where they're going, what direction they're in? Their farm system is now rated 3 or 4, depending on who you listen to. It was 27, 28 for all those years that they were competitive. This is a transition year. There's no way to sugarcoat it. What that transition is going to look like, we're soon going to find out.
Bruce, this is my only criticism of the Ricketts this offseason. What we have said about them lacking a star is true and undeniable. They certainly have the financial wherewithal to afford to be the highest bidder for any star that was on the free agent market. I felt like Carlos Correa was that guy who
they did.
I know, but get it done. You know, pull it off.
Yeah, but did anyone else give him a 10-year deal?
No, but I guess
would you have been happy with a 1-year contract for him?
I would have been happy with him in a Cub uniform on Thursday. That whatever it would have required to get that done, as unrealistic as it might be to hold him to that standard, that's the fan standard to which we're holding Tom Ricketts. And I think that's an understandable reaction. The other stuff is, I think, baggage and will take time to sort out and sort through, and he's an easy target because, you know, the biblical losses and chasing Chelsea and these kinds of things are contradictions. But I think that when you talk about Carlos Correa specifically, that's the one area I wish they would have gotten it done any way they would have needed to do.
Let's be honest about Carlos Correa. He took the most money he could get, no matter who it was, with all due respect to the Minnesota Twins, for 1 year. That's a 3-year deal, but it's only going to be a 1-year deal unless he gets hurt. Okay, then it'll be a 3-year deal. He's making the most money of any position player in baseball for that 1 year. $35,100,000 is what he's making. Right. And he's biding his time to go to another place.
Right.
You know, right?
Bruce, I'd rather defend you than argue with you right now because I don't like Otto coming after you. I don't like people coming after you.
I think it's great that he did. I mean, honestly, that's what this forum is for, David.
You're right.
It's an open forum. We don't cut people off.
We didn't cut him off. We gave him his.
No, I'm saying other people. Yeah. Other people hang up. I welcome challenges.
Good.
Honestly.
Good. Well, people will have plenty to challenge when we come back, because you're going to make your predictions for both teams, pennant winners and divisional winners, and we'll get through that real quick. We'll share that with you in our final segment on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670.
I do believe. I hope. That the players will see the effort we made to address their concerns in this agreement as an olive branch in terms of building a better relationship. We built some processes into this agreement where we're going to be interacting more regularly with players on topics like the international draft and rule changes. I think those opportunities for positive interaction help to build a better relationship.
Welcome back to the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 674. That was Rob Manfred talking about the ground you got to cover in terms of making it back up. There's trust that has been lost with players and with fans, Bruce. Let's see if everybody comes back to baseball this week, opening day, days away. Cannot wait. Let's do our predictions. Let's start with the American League. Division winners and wild card qualifiers. Who you got?
All right, sir. For the American, for the National League Central, I have the Brewers winning the division. Brewers, Cards, Cubs, Reds, and Pirates. National League East, I have the Braves, Phils, Mets, Marlins, and the Nats. National League West, Dodgers, Padres, Giants, Rockies, D-backs. American League Central, I have the White Sox, Tigers, Twins, KC, Indians. AL East, I have Blue Jays, Yanks, Boston, Tampa, O's. And the West, I have the M's, followed by Houston, Angels, Texas, and A's. I have the White Sox and the Dodgers in the World Series.
Excellent. All right. Okay, so in the interest of time, I'll just go my division winners in National League. Braves, Brewers, Dodgers, wild card NL teams, Cardinals, Mets, Padres, and in the American League, Blue Jays are going to win the East, Astros are going to win the West, White Sox are going to win the Central, and the wild card teams will be the Yankees, the Red Sox, and because I've picked them to make the playoffs the last, I think, 15 years, the Angels. Because they always pick the Angels in preseason, and they never make it. But I'm going to go with the Angels as a wild card qualifier. And in the ALCS, I have the White Sox beating the Blue Jays, winning the pennant, and the Dodgers beating the Braves. And in the World Series prediction, Dodgers and White Sox, Bruce, I have the Dodgers beating the White Sox.
In 4-2, like 1959?
That would be something. Yeah, I don't remember 1959, but let's go with that.
You know what? All of our picks for division winners other than the American League West were the same. Our picks for the World Series teams were the same. I didn't pick. I'm gonna say the White Sox win in seven for the World Series.
I like it.
So there you go.
I mean, AL MVP, Bruce.
AL MVP is Luis Robert.
Well, that's right. You picked that early. I like that. I think Vlad Guerrero Jr. How about Cy Young?
Cy Young in the American League, I will go with Dylan Cease.
Wow! Out on a limb. Okay, Shane Bieber.
I think he's going to lead baseball in strikeouts this year.
Shane Bieber will become the first Guardians pitcher to ever win the Cy Young Award.
The only Guardians pitcher.
Exactly. How about National League, MVP?
MVP in the National League, I'm going to go with probably Dodgers and their shortstop Trey Turner.
You can make a lot of guys on the Dodgers and outrageous.
I'm picking Trey Turner.
Okay, wow. That's a little bit out there. Juan Soto. I think Juan Soto is going to stay healthy, put up some big numbers to get that. I think he's definitely the guy. It's his time now. Cy Young, my choice. Not exactly out of limb, but I love the idea of him changing teams and not changing anything about his performance level. Max Scherzer. Mad Max comes back, wins Cy Young for the New York Mets.
I'm going to go with probably a Mets pitcher as well. And I'm going with you. I think Scherzer's the guy. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what, Bruce?
I'll stick with it.
This is the point of the program. I've waited for an hour and 53 minutes to remind you that a year ago at this time I picked Shohei Ohtani to win the MVP, which is the reason I wanted to do this segment so I could successfully pick the MVP again.
Yeah, well, this year he might be the Cy Young Award winner instead.
He might. And next year I look forward to bringing you back in a year from now to tell you that maybe I was right again. Hey, I have to be right about something once in a while.
I'm living off the Ohtani one. I'm hoping people forget our predictions because they're usually pretty far off, you know. So you deserve credit for last year's. And people can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Also on our website, I write Cubs and Sox every day during the baseball season at 670thescore.com. We have people to thank, David.
Yes, we do. Thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you to Tony La Russa. Thank you to Nico Horner. Thank you to Cesar Perez for keeping us on the air. And thank you to you, Bruce, for lining everything up, taking your share of hits, and also just having some fun baseball conversations.
I love Otto. Otto's my main man.
Stay right here on The Score. Next is Steve Rosenblum and Adam Studzinski, Saturday Suckage. 2 o'clock, the Cubs, Matt Spiegel, play-by-play. And at 6:45, big game for the Bulls tonight against the Heat. Keep it right here on The Score all day long. Thank you for listening. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.